This is Amateur Logic, episode 191, from March 15th, 2024. Amateur Logic is brought to you by ICOM. Put a spring in your step with ICOM. Get outside this spring and work out the kinks in your station. ICOM has the radio for you. Greetings and welcome to another action-packed episode of Amateur Logic. I'm George.
I'm Tommy.
I'm Emil.
And I'm Mike.
And it's good to be back with you on a March the 15th episode. I'm going to have tool time here in just a moment. Tommy, what are you going to have for us tonight?
Well, you remember when Ray came over here with the 905? Mm-hmm. I managed to hijack that thing, and I've actually still got it for another week or two, I guess. Anyway, I just played around with that a little bit, checked it out, kind of kicked the tires on it.
Okay. Mike, what are you going to have?
Another segment on the BitX40 that I've been working on. So I'm sorry, Marty, but I'm losing bad.
This will be part two. So is this, I don't remember what the first part was, but which part are you going to do this time?
Part two.
Okay.
Yes, for that.
All right.
I thought it was a trick question.
Yeah.
It's a trick answer.
I'm going to do absolutely nothing.
Just kind of taking it easy, huh?
I'm the cheap slacker this month, but I do have some pictures to show y'all. So
you do.
Keep viewing. Keep watching.
I've seen them. You got some good pictures there. Well, first up, on a sad note tonight, there's been a lot of tributes online recently to Bob Heil. You know, on February the 28th, he died at age 83. He succumbed to cancer that he had been fighting for a year. We knew he had been ill. We just didn't know how ill, because I just talked with him a few weeks ago. He sounded great. So we're really going to miss Bob. He's going to be remembered in ham radio and pro audio for a lot of years. There's been a lot of tributes on different YouTube channels across the spectrum. I did one with the Ham Nation folks Wednesday night, and we remembered a lot about Bob on there. All I can say is he's a really good friend to us. I'm just thankful that I got to know him back in May 2002. This is the first time that Bob and Gordo and I had ever met in person. We had been doing Ham Nation for not quite a year together at that point. This is when we were doing a live stream on Leo Laporte's The Tech Guy. We were streaming that live using Exceed satellite internet service. Bob, we will be seeing you on the other side. One more photo here. And Mike, you can tell us what this one is.
That was from a couple of years ago. And Bob, of course, doing his famous, the mic. It all starts with a microphone. This was in Milton, Ontario at a ham fest. It's probably about 5 years ago. It was a nice day, and really enjoyed getting a chance to talk to Bob, because usually you go to a big ham fest like Hamvention, and he's so inundated by his legions of fans that it's hard to just talk with Bob on a one-by-one. But this was an opportunity that I'll never forget. I first met Bob back actually before I was licensed in the early 80s at a Hamvention when it was at the Hare Arena. Actually didn't even know who Bob was at the time. He took the time to talk to me about microphones, and I was really impressed the fact that you're a young teenager, he would talk to you like as if you were a well-seasoned ham. So I've never forgotten that. Yeah, he's surely going to be missed for sure. He was a mentor to all of us.
Oh, yeah. Tommy, you met him a bunch of times.
Oh, yeah. He's a great guy. Yep. He actually, when I went to Missouri, he invited me to come to his house he had up there and see his setup and everything. Yeah. Super nice guy. Most real, down-to-earth, friendly fellow you'd ever want to meet.
Yeah. Emil, you met him before, too.
Tommy nailed it. Absolutely nailed it. Down-to-earth, talk to anyone, has so many stories, so much to share, and he did. Do that. I had the pleasure of attending with you, George, one of his symposiums down here at our ham fest. We went out to dinner with him after, that, and just a very personable person, and he would share with anyone and everyone his story, so definitely missed him.
Very few people make an impact on this hobby as he has.
Yeah, not just this hobby, and pro audio as well. And
oh, yeah, a lot of different things.
Yeah, and the thing that always got me, and I still don't know where he got the energy.
Yeah, that's for sure. He was always on the go, that guy.
You'd see him at Hamvention. And the best you could probably do, and I mean, we know him, but we'd wave. I mean, we'll see him sometime during there. But there was a line of people backed up waiting to meet Bob and to ask him about, you know, how should I set my radio for this, or what kind of mic would work best with this particular brand.
Mm-hmm.
Just all kinds of questions. And Bob took the time. He would go to Hamvention, and he'd spend the whole show just standing there in the booth and meeting folks who came up. And maybe Sunday afternoon he'd get a chance to walk around and look a little bit at the flea market.
Yeah, he always had a line.
Yeah. So, Bob, 7-3 and good DX.
7-3, Bob.
7-3, Bob.
Now we got another announcement to make here before we go too far. And this is probably not going to make sense to... I know it doesn't make sense to me, but we're going to read it anyway. Cloudflare is a service that we use for the SSL certificate for the Amateur Logic website. They're going to stop issuing certificates for the cross-signed CA chain on May 15th of 2024. The expiration of the cross-signed chain will primarily affect older devices, Android 7.0s and earliers, and systems that solely rely on cross-signed chains and lack the ISRG Root X1 chain in their trust store. This change could result in certificate validation failures on these devices, potentially leading to warning messages or access problems for users visiting your website. So we have not really researched it. We just got this message today. So it's possible if you're using an older Android phone and you go to the Amateur Logic site, it might not be able to validate the SSL certificate, but this will be why if you run into that. So,
yeah. It really didn't give us any options of anything to do about it that I noticed.
I think somewhere in there they mentioned certain certificates that would have that problem and some wouldn't. And we really haven't looked to see which one we've got yet.
Yeah, so anyway, we're going to look into it some more. But if you get SSL message after the 15th, then you'll know why.
Yep. We are yellow down here. Well, we were until it rained today. Everything in Mississippi
the pollen,
is yellow.
Yeah, the pollen is horrendous.
So the allergies have been kicking up a little bit. So if I go a little hoarse on you, that's what it is.
What you laughing at, Emil?
The pollening. They call it the pollening or whatever.
It's really bad. You guys probably have it down there pretty bad right now too, don't you?
Yep, absolutely.
Yep.
Gotta wash your car every day.
Well, Emil, you've got a segment tonight. Well, it's not really an official segment because you're slacking, but it's going to end up being about a segment's worth by the time you get to the bottom of the stack here. Let me just tell you, it's really out of this world.
That's a very accurate description, Joy. So my uncle, who lives in Houston, Texas, called me up and said, "Hey, you coming to the Houston Ham Fest?" And I had never been to the Houston Ham Fest. He lives out there, south of Houston, and offered to house us. So I took my dad and my nephew, and we went over to the Houston Space Center. The line was literally wrapped all the way to the back of the parking lot to get in this day that we went. The really big facility. On my hat here, my dad happened to pick up a... one of the Artemis pins, because my son is working as a mechanical engineer on the Artemis project for Boeing. So He was really excited to see some of that. They had a lot of things, and there's a exhibit getting ready to open about it.
I've never been to that Space Center. I'd like to go sometime.
Yeah.
You been?
I have been. I did field day there 1 year.
Oh, that was at the Space Center?
Yeah. I didn't get to do the tour. I just went to the, I saw the ham shack, though.
Well, you saw the important part.
Well, yeah, that was it. It was tiny in comparison with everything else that was there.
Right. And it looks different than the one they used on For All Mankind.
It's a really big place, campus-wise.
Is it bigger than Huntsville?
Yeah. There's similar things, but there's I think there's three tours total. There's this facility where the astronauts actually train, which is phenomenal. If the tour is available, you can actually get go through the mission control, which is another awesome thing. When we were there, they were launching, I want to say SpaceX had mission, or Crew 8 was going on, and they, whenever there's people going into space, they use the mission control, and it was closed when we were there. So we took the other two tours, but not that one. To see the rocket there from the original moon mission, that is phenomenal in itself. Just like Huntsville, the facility and the building that holds that thing is awesome. So there's a moon lander there, and there's a big, huge, humongous theater to the right there. There's all sorts of multimedia displays and interactive things you can do. This is the center when you first walk in, and I don't know any of those people. I just took pictures. It's none of our family there. In huge model and mock-up of the ISS there, actually hanging up above you, and you can walk all behind those displays, and there's all sorts of information and interactive things you can learn about, which I did. For instance, on the wall, they had a picture of this thing, which I thought was an artist, you know, just kind of an art rendition of some kind of a vehicle they made, until I saw it in the building. And that blew me away, because the weight on this thing is phenomenal. It's kind of like a moon SUV or a planet SUV. I had no idea what this was until I saw it in person. This is just a painting of it, by the way. So some spacesuits from the Apollo missions. Awesome. Just to really see. And I know this picture does not do this justice, but that's a real 3D image projection onto the moon, all the way around it, and it's lit up. I don't know if it's from within or projected. How are they doing that? But pretty neat thing.
You know, the moon is really made out of cheese. You can see the cut marks.
Yeah. The sun is a lot smaller compared to it than I thought.
Yeah, and it looks like it's a warm 5400 light. And there you go. There was a huge section on the Artemis mission, what they're doing, and lots of interaction here. In the back there was an entire wall of every mission, STSs and the moon missions and what's coming, the ISS trips. That was a phenomenal area right there. Portraits of every crew and every mission ever building on that wall.
Wow.
Yeah, and apparently there's some issues with cables and things being hit, whether it's the outer shielding or cabling. Apparently there's some meteors and items that get whacked. You can see to the right there on that writing, there's the actual size of something that hit, and then they show you the damage it caused. I guess when you're moving at 15,400 miles per hour, even the smallest things hit you can cause trouble.
Yeah, I read the sign down there on that one. That's aluminum.
Yeah.
And it got hit, and they said it was still working fine. Doesn't look fine, but it was still going.
View from the ISS observatory.
That cable, is that like conductive cable, or is that like tension cable?
I think that's how they hook the solar panels to the space station, wasn't it?
Okay. Yeah, there was a power cables, yep.
Yep.
Mock-up of the old shuttle and its cargo bay there, which you'll see a little bit later. We actually got to get in the real thing.
Wow.
And there's one of the solar panels. That picture doesn't do it justice. These things are huge. So generating some power, man.
Tiling off a kitchen floor or something.
A little bigger than what we fold up and carry around with us. To
just a little bit bigger, field. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's me and my excited dad and nephew waiting for the tour to start.
Your nephew looks like he's having a really good time.
Now, were these astronauts out in the pen there?
Yep. There's sometimes with the government, there can be a lot of bull. So there they are.
Okay. I was wondering. I did not see them when I was there.
Would those be Texas Longhorns?
That's the Texas Longhorns, buddy. Yep. You got it, Mike. They're sitting right in front of the big Saturn building. And this is the actual Orion mission building where I'm sure they're doing lots of work, getting ready to go. Lots of communication facilities all around this place when we were traveling through it. And it's got some radomes there and satellite dishes. There's lots of
It's kind of funny to see the radar dishes or the satellite dishes pointed straight up.
We're not talking terrestrial here. Yeah, like I said, lots of communication spots as we moved along towards it. And they're doing a lot of construction, too. We noticed that was a lot of construction happening. Maybe they're getting ready for something. So this is the building I was telling you about. And each one of these modules here is a mock-up of the actual ISS modules. And the astronauts get to make mistakes, and I'll quote the tour guide, they get to make mistakes here before they blow up themselves in the real thing.
Oh.
Good to practice first.
Practice what not to do.
Exactly. So they walk you along this building. This facility here is huge. Long walk within this building, but this is where the astronauts actually train and learn how to do it right the first time. Neat modules for sure. All the mission patches and things that have happened on the different modules. And there's the Soyuz capsule to the right there. And I don't know if you noticed this, Tommy and Mike, but that's you could tell just by that. It's a server rack and instrumentation rack, which is what, you know, being in IT, I was drawn to it like a fly to a bug light. I don't know if this was crash test dummies or what.
Sure looks like it.
But they did have a lot of workshops on the floor, no doubt, for whatever they were doing. And like I was saying before, my son works for the Boeing company on the Artemis manufacturing research stuff. So when I saw their pieces, parts, I snapped a shot or two and sent it his way just to show him where we were. And that's their Starliner that you've probably seen people going up in. I think they're actually sending people up there. I want to say William Shatner was one of them to go into space.
Finally.
Instead of on a camera.
Looked like a fun trip, Emil.
Absolutely, George.
Yeah,
we had a good time, and the Ham Fest was good, too.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about the Ham Fest. I have not... you got the squirrel-proof rope.
I'm going to let you know if it's squirrel-proof, because I put mine up a couple weeks ago.
All right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd put money on it.
So what about the Ham Fest, Emil? Because my son lives in Houston, so I've thought about going to that Ham Fest before.
Yeah, this was a decent size, and they had a very good showing of their emergency preparedness. They had a big van, kind of like ICOM's van out in the parking lot in of course, in Texas, they had a lot of people with industrial site experience there, because I sat there and talked to them for hours on some of my refinery, or as we called it, the Hazwoper training and what we used to do and prepare for all of that stuff. So lots of people down there in the oil industry industrial. But the Hamfest itself is pretty nice size, and their forums, very well organized. ARRL gave a good one, and they had one with the one I caught was the forum about digital satellite work. It wasn't voice side. It was people who are starting to run the digital modes through, not just packet either, all of them, sideband and some of the sound modes. So neat stuff.
Cool. Joe's wanting to know, while you were out there, did you have any budget meetings with the folks at NASA. No.
It would have been a short meeting.
Yeah, I'm sure they would have kicked me out anyway, but no budget meetings with NASA while I was there.
Okay.
I can just envision how that meeting would have went. This year's budget, we have no budget.
Budget's been canceled.
Let's move on now with the show. First up tonight, it's tool time. And I've got a variety of of tools here. You know, sometimes you just can't find a tool that does exactly what you want. That's good, Here's Emil. Wilson, that worked out. Right yeah, there. That's what I noticed, yeah. Sometimes you can't find a tool that is what you need. So what do you do in that case? Well, you make your own, which occasionally it's bending things, like this right here. See if we can get a better look at that. This is a Craftsman screwdriver.
This looks like a round the corner flathead.
Yeah, you can see it's had a little little modification. There was a particular model of an Intel CPU. I don't remember which one it was, but it was very difficult to pull the clips back to get the CPU out. So that's why I made that. But it's ended up being a nice pry bar for various small projects. There was another time a friend of mine, Earl, was over here, and he had a Takamimi, or however you pronounce it, acoustic guitar.
Close. Yep. Takamimi, yeah.
Yeah. And it had, at the very bottom of it, where you hook strap on, that was also where you plug in the cord for the pickup in there. Mm-hmm. And it had gotten loose and was moving around. And he needed it tightened. And there was no way to stick your arm down through the hole and get to it. It's just impossible. So in that case, I remembered a trick that a chief engineer at the television station I worked at did to help me fix my Ford Courier one time. Went up to the auto parts store, and I bought a number 14 metric wrench, which was the right size to fit on that nut inside of there. Took a torch, heated it up, just like how I did the screwdrivers. You heat up the metal and put a 90-degree angle in it. And now I have a Takamimi. I'm not sure how to say it. No, I just got the wrench for one.
But if you ever get the guitar, you're going
to
be set.
Yeah, if you ever need to tighten up a quarter-inch jack inside of acoustic guitar, yeah, you can use
George
that
is
right
your guy.
There. Yep.
Is that a Craftsman lifetime warranty tool?
No, this is a GM Performance Parts.
Oh, okay, I noticed the screwdriver is a Craftsman.
Yes, and if Sears was still around, I could probably get my money back.
That's why they're not still around.
Now, probably, I'm going to say a lot of you have one of these right here.
Yeah, I got one.
Helping Hands.
The old Helping Hands. You know, Radio Shack sold these, and they're still around, but I'm going to say some of them today, particularly the ones they got at Harbor Freight, the base on it is not quite this heavy.
Yeah.
So they turn over pretty easy. Even this one, this was a Radio Shack original.
I've got a Harbor Freight one.
Yeah. It kind of wiggles around, but they're really handy, you know, if you got to solder a couple wires together or whatever. Pro tip here, the alligator clips that come in them, the plating will flake off eventually, and they'll be a little rusty. Or if you hit it with a soldering iron and some solder, you might get solder stuck to the alligator clips. Or use some Mueller 60X stainless steel alligator clips and put in here, and these will not rust. And you cannot get solder to stick to them unless you've got special stainless steel solder.
Pro tip right there.
Pro tip. You want to remember that one. Also,
Bueller. Anyone?
Bend them.
Bueller.
Right. Not Bueller, Mueller.
Oh, Mueller.
Yeah. Bend the end here, and that way you got more reach on your...
Got some leverage.
Yeah, bigger mouth.
Yeah, you buy Mueller clips, you buy them for life, that's for sure.
Yep. But this, you know, I think it's got a little weight to it. I can't throw that in my toolbox and go in the truck and carry this with me. And sometimes I need to solder something, and I don't have enough hands to do it. And that's why I came up with this device right here, which is just one of these old plastic clips that you get at Harbor Freight or a bag of them at Walmart or wherever. Stuck a screw through it of the right size and just slipped one of those stainless steel Mueller clips on it. Now, wherever I go, let me see your hand, Tommy.
No, thank you.
You can just clamp it onto a desk or wherever, and you got one helping hand anyway. But I keep that in my toolbox. It doesn't weigh anything, doesn't take up much room. But, you know, that's just another thing I threw together because I had a need, and that's how I solved it. Now, anybody want to guess what this is?
It looks like a wire bender.
It's...
Or a wire twister.
You're kind of on the right track, but not exactly. It's a wire untwister.
Okay.
So...
I was looking at it upside down.
I think, yeah, that would make sense. You got a piece of Cat 5 cable, and you want to put a RJ45 connector on it. Pull off the insulation. Cut it at an angle like this, 45-degree angle. Then, when you want to untwist these wires here, all you got to do is just slide this in between two of the wires, give it a couple of twists, and then you got them separated, and you didn't nick up your fingers on the ends trying to get them all untwisted. This just makes quick work of it. Well, you do have to slip it on just one wire, not the pair. And it's a quick way to get them apart. But now, even though you got them apart, you see those wires, they're still
kind of wavy.
Kind of wavy. And it makes it a little difficult to get them all lined up and in the connector. So you just get a little block of wood, saw off three finishing nails, drill you three holes in here. Just thread it through there. If I can get it to where you can see it. Give it a pull. And then you got straight wires. Then you can put all those together, clip them off, put them in your RJ45. So... I use the heck out of this.
Don't tell Mrs. V3MIC, but for long lengths of wire that I need straightening, I use the doorknobs.
This one is my pride and joy.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And a lot of folks are not going to understand what this is all about right here. Any guess what this is?
Did you check your makeup?
That's the, hey,
that?
Get off my lawn without getting caught.
Yeah.
When you're riding your motorcycle.
This is a bicycle mirror with reflectors on it. If you ever tried to use a little mechanics mirror, you know, yeah, not very one. Big around and got a telescopic wand on it, and you're trying to work on a transmitter, and all you can see is a little bitty spot.
Yeah, almost like a little dentist tool.
Yep. Get you a wooden dowel, saw it off about 8 inches or... a foot long, drill you a hole in it, screw a bicycle mirror into it. You can find these on Amazon. That's where I got this one. I made several of these because I put them at all my transmitter sites. If you look closely, Emil, you might see a monkey in there.
I'd hate to get pulled over at a roadside stop with one of those in the car and then have to explain what it's for.
Well, it's an emergency. It's sort of like emergency rearview mirror. If you knock the one off your car, you can just hang this one out the window, you know, and you can still see behind you. It was about $13, I think, which the first time I made one of these 30 years ago. I leave them at all my transmitter sites, though, because it's really helpful.
$13 for a pride and joy, that's a bargain.
That is. That's what I was saying. You know, look at that.
Yeah.
You can even cast images with it.
Those little mirrors are nice, but they're just too small, really.
Yeah. This, you know, I can work on something with this. The others, really too small. Some of you may have had these. Radio Shack used to sell a little mini amplified speaker. It's got a 9-volt battery in there, just a little powered speaker. It's got some jacks on the side. You could plug in an external DC supply if you didn't want to use a battery. I modified this one. I just put an RCA jack on the back so I'd have that connection because, you know, I always...
Because everything in this building is modified.
Yes. There you go.
It is. I'm not kidding.
This was an old Radio Shack. This is probably out of the 70s. Well, the whole thing is. They used to sell RCA cables that were coiling.
That's actually a quality cable.
That is a decent cable. So I just put me some Allegra clips on one end. And if I'm working on an audio project, I can just clamp those across it and see if I've got signal there or about how loud it was or kind of how it sounds. If you don't have an oscilloscope, I've used these. Take the ground, hook it to the ground, put you a capacitor right here between the red one. Just hang a capacitor out, and then you can poke around a PC board on an amplifier or radio or something and hear the signal at different points. They used to sell those called signal tracers. I think Ico had one and might have been some other brands, but the same thing. You just put a capacitor in there so you don't get any DC back into the amplifier. Just kind of decouples it. But you can't buy these anymore. Hadn't been able to buy those for a number of years.
That's actually pretty nice. I wouldn't mind having a little speaker like that. Something like that.
What's that catalog number? We got to look up that catalog number.
277-1008 Charlie.
Good night. Nice.
But you can't get that anymore. You can get this, though. Now, maybe not this exact model. What that is, it's actually a Bluetooth speaker, but it has an auxiliary input on the back. It's got a mini plug back there, so I just made me a cable, plug it into the jack, and then I've got a little powered speaker there. I can go in one room at the patch panel and hook that across it, go across the hall, hit some audio to it, and you'll hear it all over the building. If you're doing audio work, it's very handy to have. You don't want to be, well, if you got nothing else, taking a set of headsets and some jumper leads and trying to find what pair of wires you need to be on, if you can do something like that, just makes it easier. Now, this is not something I built, but something I ran across. And it has been pretty handy, you know. Sometimes you want to label some wire. Let's say I've got some RG8X here.
And sometimes some people want to always label their wires.
Yep. It's not a bad idea. Say if you got three or four antennas coming in your shack, which one is which? Well, you can take your label maker and you can print out a label. Like, this one says dipole.
Yeah, I got something like that.
All right. And you can't get it to stay like that. If you lay it lengthwise and try to get it to go down, it's just going to roll right up on you. You can try doing it this way. And, yeah, that'll stay for a while, but it will eventually come loose, too. You could wrap some Scotch tape right around here a couple of times, and that might make it work. You got your blade on you there.
There you go. You're always modifying stuff, and he's got a blade. Yeah. Sounds like a match.
It is. So, rather than do this, there is a better way, Emil. This is not it, but it's something I have often used.
Is it cheap?
It's not real expensive. You can buy white heat shrink tubing, slide down over there, and take you a Sharpie, and you can write whatever it is on there. That'll last a few years, but it'll fade out. don't depend on the Sharpie. It says permanent.
You mean the permanent is not permanent?
Permanent is not permanent at all.
Permanent as long as it lasts.
Yep. So if you're going to do that, you go over it a bunch of times with that Sharpie. Then you hit it with a heat shrink gun, your heat gun, shrink it down, and it'll stay a little longer, but still not permanent. Now this, I don't know if this is permanent or not because I hadn't had it long enough.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a lot of us.
Mill must have really deep pockets. He keep pulling stuff out of his pants.
Watch it.
This is a Brother label maker. This particular one is a, PTD 400. You know, there's all kinds of Brother label makers.
Yeah, I've got one.
This is a fair one right here.
I got one I've had for probably 25 years.
Wow.
20 years.
This one's not quite that old.
No, that looks like fairly new.
Well, there's a newer model of this one now. They've even got
it's even got a QWERTY keyboard.
Yeah, they've got the newest model of this has also got a USB port on it, and there's software. You can draw things and print it on a label. So, you know, I could have printed one of these with that right there. But it'd have been the same thing, you know. It wouldn't really stick on that cable forever without a bunch of coaxing. Now, let me say this first. If you need a piece of heat shrink tubing on that cable, just go with real heat shrink tubing. You know, it's thick, it's rugged, it's going to last better. However, if you need to label that wire...
Uh-oh. I think I see an expenditure coming up.
Yes, you do see an expenditure coming up. This right here is heat shrink label tape.
Whoa.
Oh,
wow. Yes.
I had no idea they had such a thing.
They do have such a thing, and you can get it at Amazon.
Can you get it in size M?
You can, I can't scroll down.
Be pretty small.
But you see they're listing a number of different printers that it works with there.
Yeah, I don't remember mine. I'll have to check it out.
There's more than just this one and the ones that are shown. They have this for a variety of the Brother label makers. Maybe some of the Dymos, too. I'm not sure about that. But it's heat shrink tubing. It's flattened so that it'll fit in the label maker.
But you got to have a craftsman around the corner.
Yes, you got to have a big
around the corner screwdriver to open
tool.
It up.
Yep. Anyway, it's heat shrink tubing. So you just take your Brother label maker. I got my name in there, but that's not what I want to print. Clear it out. Should have hit the contrast or something, I think. Yes, clear it.
That's good.
Flatpole. Let's choose a size for it. 12. Let's jump it on up. I think we could probably get 18 to work on here. And we'll print that out. And I have got, this is a 0.46 inch or 11.7 millimeter.
That's pretty awesome.
Yep.
I notice it still ends up wasting a lot of material like the label makers do.
It does. But there now you can heat shrink that down, put your connector on, and that won't come off. And I think it's pretty durable. You know, I really haven't been able to scratch it off. So
George, is the heat shrink itself the sensitive material that actually gets printed, or is it printing on top of the heat shrink tubing?
That I can't tell
it
you.
It would have to be.
It is a piece of heat shrink tubing, yeah, and you'd say it's got to be on it.
Yeah, it'd have to be laying it on there because when you heat that up, otherwise it would turn dark.
Yeah, that's what I was
but
thinking.
It doesn't. It doesn't.
So there must be a ribbon of sorts inside that cartridge that actually prints onto that.
See, I can't scratch it off with a fingernail, so it's on there pretty good.
Wow.
However, that's they're putting it on.
That's impressive.
Yeah. Heat it down, and wow, it's a great label there. Still, it's not as thick as regular heat shrink. So if you need heat shrink here for stress relief or something, better use regular heat shrink. But for labeling, man, that is hard to beat right there. And the price?
Cha-ching.
$20.69 for a three-pack.
Wow.
Wow. What?
Yeah. You get it in 5.8, 8.8, 11.7, 17.7. 23.6 millimeters. So a lot of different sizes.
And that's 5 feet, roughly, of heat shrink in each one.
Yes.
That's a lot of labeled cables.
For $20, that'll last you a while, man.
That's pretty impressive.
Yes. Now, you know, it can only be as big as what they can flatten out and run through the label maker, but... You know, the one that I've got in here right now is, what, practically a half inch? I think the biggest one I have here that I purchased was, well, it was probably the half inch. But they've got some a little bigger than that, I believe.
Yeah, that probably won't fit my machine. I'll probably have to buy a new machine. Because mine uses those small cartridges.
These are reasonably cheap now. They're not that expensive. Oh, this was 0.69 inches.
Okay, a little over.
Yeah, it's kind of like inkjet printers, I think. They take a loss or they sell the printers at cost and they make it up on the refills.
Yeah, of course.
On the supplies.
Three of these for $20.
That's still a good bargain, I think.
That's not bad. And, of course, it's not Brother Brand. It's, what did they say it was? U Super?
The mill? Is that approved?
U Super Ink.
Yeah.
I say yeah, because it's, you can even get 10% if you apply that coupon.
There you go.
So I got four different sizes here myself, and there are more than that. But that's it for tool time. So I hope you got a tip there on something you can use.
Uh-huh.
You can now justify spending a little extra money on your label maker. This was under $100. I don't know what these go for now. But they're not real expensive.
That's pretty cool. I had no idea that existed.
Yep.
I'll probably be having one pretty soon.
Gotta love a man who makes his own tools, modifies everything around, and labels it.
There you go.
I'm not kidding about everything being modified in here. I've said something about that before. It's still true.
Yeah. A lot of the gear, some of the gear we're using here has been modified. The audio mixers. Had the heck modified out of it. A lot of stuff around here. But, hey, if it don't do what you want it to do, put a torch to it and bend it. All right, we'll be back in just a moment.
Put a spring in your step with ICOM. Get outside this spring and work out the kinks in your station. Fixing ice-damaged HF antennas, preparing for an upcoming VHF contest, or portable operations, ICOM has the radio for you. Upgrade your station with one of ICOM's fabulous HF radios. With the IC7610, faint signals are no longer challenging for DXers and contesters. The high-performance RMDR can pick out the faintest of signals, even in the presence of stronger adjacent signals. This is the SDR every ham wants. With ICOM's IC905, VHF contesting is a breeze. This all-mode rig covers five bands with one radio. 2 meters, 70 centimeters, 1.2 gigahertz, 2.4 gigahertz, 5.6 gigahertz bands, and with the optional CX10G transverter, 10 gigahertz. Large color touchscreen, easy D-Star settings, and a separate controller and RF module configuration to reduce signal loss. Explore the world of microwave with the IC905. The IC705 and IC7300 are the perfect go-to rigs for outdoor hams who love POTA and SOTA activations. Both radios feature a large touchscreen with real-time spectrum scope and waterfall for intuitive function and setting operations. The IC705 provides base station features and performance in the palm of your hand from HF to 50, 144, and 440 MHz. The IC7300 is an industry first, using RF direct sampling in an entry-level HF radio. If you're getting a head start on hurricane season, ICOM's IC7100, ID5100, ID50, or ID52 are the perfect traveling companions and should be on your go kit list. From high-powered base stations to compact and travel-friendly handhelds, ICOM radios offer in-demand features and functions to keep you active on all bands, inside your shack, or out in the field. For more information about ICOM's amateur radios, visit icomamerica.com/amateur today.
Mike, I think you have an email here you want to share with us.
I do have an email. I'm so excited. I don't get very many emails. And this one comes from Ken, Victor Echo 3, Foxtrot India Tango. And he writes, "Hi, Mike. I was just watching Amateur Logic number 189 and saw that you were building a BitX 40. I built the BitX 20 about 15 years ago, and from what I could see and what I could remember, the circuitry is still quite similar, using bidirectional amplifiers to build a minimal SSB transceiver. Mine worked as well as I could make it work, but I have to tell you, I was quite disappointed in the performance. I was a development technician in electronics R&D lab, now retired. First, there was no RF amplifier stage in the receiver, RX. The signal went almost directly from the antenna to the mixer. I could only receive comfortably the strongest of signals. Secondly, I was using a dynamic handheld microphone, and I really had to yell into it to get full RF output. I recall that the rig was only about 5 watts PEP. The rig badly needed a microphone preamp. And I'll just echo those comments, even though I haven't tried it myself, but I've heard lots of comments about people trying to connect dynamic amps and they need an amplifier or a preamp to go with that." He goes on to say, "I can't remember who the vendor was, a K6 maybe, but the whole kit cost about $80 without an enclosure. It was fun to build, but ultimately I sold it off at Hanfest and bought a used MFJ 20-meter QRB SSB transceiver for $100. It is far more satisfying. Have fun. I'm looking forward to seeing the results on Amateur Logic. 7-3, Ken."
You've been working on this for a long time.
Really,
sort of
really
like
long time.
Johnny Cash method.
That's right. I got, what was that song? I got it one piece at a time.
Yeah.
Didn't cost you a dime.
Actually, I got a bit of a funny story, but maybe I'll save the story until after we see this segment.
All right.
BitX 40, Part 2. In Amateur Logic Episode 189, I started assembly of a vintage BitX 40 kit that I've had sitting in my box of unfulfilled dreams since 2016. Shortly after receiving my BitX 40 kit, the Reduino upgrade became available that replaces the conventional VCO. In Part 1, I mentioned that I would be adding a few modifications, and because a nice enclosure that I'm using came with functions already silkscreened, I would need to change them because of these mods. Titling your own projects back in the day, you basically had just two options: dry transfer labels that you rubbed on using a pencil, or the trusty Dymo label gun, which used an adhesive vinyl tape in which you embossed onto the tape letter by letter. Step into the 21st century. I'm going to show you how I do my panel labeling using permanent vinyl sheets that you can print on a laser or inkjet printer. The first thing we'll need to do is design our front panel graphic. You can use your favorite graphics editor such as Paint.net, Inkscape, or even MS Paint. All of these are free to use. I generally print on white vinyl. This way the letters will appear as white lettering and results in a high visibility image since you're printing around the letters rather than printing the letters themselves. When I feel that I have everything properly spaced and laid out, I test by printing on paper before printing on the adhesive vinyl. Once printed, I then cut out the paper printout and use it as a template to ensure everything is spaced accordingly. If not, I go back and make the adjustments to the layout design. As you can see here, I need to make a few adjustments. Looking at the arrows, you can see what needs to be altered. After making these changes, I print out another paper template and test again. Once everything looks good, I print out on a sheet of permanent adhesive vinyl. Be sure to use vinyl sheets that are suitable for the type of printer that you will be using, be it inkjet or laser. I like using white, but you may use any color that will provide a high contrast for the color of the lettering and graphics used in your design. I printed on white vinyl sheets using a color laser printer and found that the toner was rubbing off onto my hands. To stop this from occurring, I carefully covered the white printed vinyl with clear vinyl to protect it. After applying the vinyl onto my enclosure, I then needed to cut out the areas for the display and the holes for the screws and controls. I used an X-Acto knife with a fine blade for this job. Since I didn't need to cover up any of the existing silk screening, I decided to make a custom label just for the AGC control. I will likely have other mods to add in the future and can simply design and print additional labels for those rather than having to design and print an entire back panel. Now that we've got our enclosure all finished, it's time to install the main BIDX40, Arduino display board, and the chassis mounted hardware and controls. Both the BIDX40 and Arduino came supplied with all the necessary wiring sets with these multi-pin connectors pre-installed at one end. Some of the wires on the 8-pin connector are not used, so I carefully removed them using a tiny jeweler's flat-bladed screwdriver. If you look closely at the connector housing, you can see the small locking tabs. By depressing them slightly with the screwdriver, the wires should just pull out. In thinking of cable management, I decided on simply twisting the 2-conductor wires and braiding the 3-conductor wire sets. It's not as good as using shielded cabling, but the twisted pairs are better than nothing at all. Now might be a good time to go over a few of the modifications that I've made. I replaced the LM7805 linear voltage regulator on the Arduino with a switch mode device. It's a drop-in replacement. This mod wasn't really what I consider to be a must-have, however, dropping the voltage down from 13.8 to 5 volts is quite a substantial input-output differential, and that voltage drop gets transformed into heat dissipation. The 7805 can handle it, but I'd rather not have all that excess heat buildup. Now these are essential mods, the addition of an inline fast-blowing fuse and a rectifier diode for reverse polarity protection. I originally had spec'd a 3-amp fuse, but for a standard output BIDX40, a 2-amp fuse is suitable. Now this is important. The diode is installed reverse biased. Should the power supply be inadvertently connected backwards, the diode would then be forward biased, causing the fuse to blow. You can use any 5400 series diode, which are rated to handle up to 3 amps of forward current. I chose this diode series so that it will permit enough current to flow in order to blow the fuse. Using a smaller rated diode may open up before causing the fuse to blow. I replaced the standard 270 degree potentiometer that is used for VFO tuning with a 10-turn pot for precise tuning and extended band coverage. This mod is usable when using a custom firmware that supports it. We'll see more of this later. I needed a 1K ohm potentiometer for the RF gain control, but all I had on hand were 10K. So I added a fixed resistor in parallel. This trick will alter the pot's characteristics, but it should still work okay for our purposes. Here is the formula for determining the fixed resistor value. It's an algebraic equation for calculating two resistors in parallel. Between high school and college, I've done enough algebra, so I took the easy route and used an online calculator. I also didn't have the ideal resistor of 1.2 k ohms on hand, so I used a 1k. Close enough at 984 ohms. Here is the AGC kit add-on. This kit permits connections to an S-meter, AGC selection, and RF gain control. Here are the connections for the RF gain control potentiometer. I needed to cut a circuit trace on the BIDX40 main board and scrape off the solder mask in a few before soldering the AGC board on top. Important to note here is that the AGC control toggle switch is a 3-pole double throw, not a double-pole double throw switch. Here is the AGC switch wiring. Note that the common is connected across both switch terminals as shown. For those unaware, a common stereo plug is actually a TRS for reasons shown in the image. I'm using these 3.5mm TRS jacks. The clear plastic window makes identifying the connections easy. These 3.5mm jacks are actually designed for PCB mounting, but we'll be soldering the wires onto the terminals directly. These jacks also have a set of contacts that we'll use to disconnect the internal speaker whenever the TRS plug is inserted into the headphone jack. Here is the microphone jack wiring and the headphone jack wiring. Note the terminals 4 and 5 are used to disconnect internal speaker. Well, here it is, all assembled, just ready for the smoke test. But I'm afraid, well, we don't have time for that today. VE3 for now from VE3MIC. I ended up using that 1K resistor instead of 1.2K, which would have been a closer value. And if you remember, I don't know what episode this is from, but we had the one of the Christmas episodes, we had the Eco Resistor Decade Box.
Yeah.
And I know why it's called that, because it takes you a decade to find the resistor value that you're looking for.
Eco.
Holy moly. Wow.
And so I could only find a 1K resistor. I could not find a 1.2K resistor and all that mess.
Oh, wow.
Close enough for government work.
That's right.
George wants to see it work, and I want to see it smoking.
Well, you know, I was in such a hurry to get everything connected and wired up that I didn't really have time to properly check my work. And for something like that, you don't want to haphazardly apply the power to it and see it go up in flames after it sitting around for, 6 years in a box and then finally being put together.
Yeah.
So next time we'll fire it up and we'll actually update the firmware to the custom firmware for the additional features.
So I'm thinking that AGC mod was necessary, judging by the email that you got there from Ken.
Yeah, it was one of the ones, like, I don't know, you could try this experiment for yourself, but just sometime when you're listening to HF, turn your AGC off and see what it sounds like. It sounds horrible. So that is an absolute must for me, and that's why I decided to order that kit and install it.
Yeah, I think the 10K pot was a good idea, too, for the VFO.
Yeah, that multi-turn pot for sure. They did with their Raduino. They had a regular 270-degree pot, and you would start from the center position of the pot and turn it clockwise or counterclockwise, and the further you turned it, the faster the tuning rate. They did that in software, but that's a little awkward, and most of us aren't used to tuning a radio like that. So I kind of like the idea of having a multi-turn pot. An optical encoder would have been ideal. That way you didn't have any stops at either end. But supposedly it covers almost the entire band with that 10-turn pot.
So now this is your front panel right here?
Yes, it is.
Now, I wanted to ask you about that. That looks mighty good there.
Yeah, it looks real good.
Yeah, the only thing, I mean, the clear vinyl that went over top was a glossy vinyl, and I'm thinking that maybe a matte vinyl. And I think, George, you and I have done this before where we've bought clear MacTac shelf liner from Walmart and put it over top of a design as a protective layer. And I think the matte vinyl would be better. It wouldn't show so much reflection. But I kind of like the idea of the white is the actual color of the vinyl. That's not printed on. So you're actually seeing the white vinyl from in behind. And it really does make it sharp in contrast.
So is that the blue there? Is that inkjet or laser or what is that?
That's laser. And you know what? I could have done a better job experimenting with the with the shade. But when you're working on a computer, you never get exactly what's going to be printed out on the printer. So I could have experimented a little bit with the shade of blue and got it closer to the actual case color, but time was of the essence.
Close enough. Now, where did you get the vinyl? Because I have not found vinyl printable sheets. I've always had to use paper. So,
you can find it on Amazon all over the place. In fact, I didn't put any links in there because it's so easily available and readily available now. And you just have to do Google search for it. And Amazon is one supplier you can get it from.
So what would you search for? What do you call it?
Printable permanent vinyl.
Permanent adhesive
vinyl, I should say. And you want to use the permanent adhesive because if you use the temporary adhesive, it may not stick as well. So it may not be so permanent.
All right. Well, that was a neat tip there, Mike. I like that.
Well, I learned permanent markers aren't permanent.
No. So we can
And like I mentioned in the video, I ended up having to use that clear vinyl because I found that the blue toner was coming off on my hands, even though it was printed onto that white vinyl. I was smudging it around.
Yeah. Well, so, the clear I was okay with it being glossy there. That looked pretty professional. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it looked nice.
It actually looks better in reality. I've got a wait right here, but the real thing looks better than the picture because you get the reflection and the flash of the camera going on.
Yeah. Let's take a quick break, come right back because Tommy's got some tires to kick.
At the end of each month, it's Amateurlogic's Ham College, the new show for those new to the hobby and those wanting to get into amateur radio.
Which of the following is a purpose of the amateur radio service as stated in the FCC rules and regulations?
That inductor and capacitor form a tuned circuit. That's how you tune the radio to the frequency that you want. The English language.
We lived in town. I liked it. I listened to mine a lot. It was really cool because you didn't have to have a battery to power them.
There's our homemade telegraph station. We can use it for long distance communications. Oh, like, 3 feet here?
Across the table.
The answer is B. Voltage was named after Italian physicist Alessandro Volta.
We can see we're generating a little bit of electricity there. It's DC.
It's always great to go back and get a refresher.
It sure is.
A lot of that stuff, if you've been a ham for a while like we have, you don't really think about a lot of that stuff that often.
They didn't have electric screwdrivers in those days, so that's why we're not using one.
That's why we went primitive with it.
Yeah. So let's see if we can hear anything when we fire off our spark gap transmitter. Well, we didn't build anything or blow up anything today, but...
The night's still young.
Gets me every time.
George, you still have that DX Radio Shack radio?
Yeah, I've still got that. It's right up there.
Oh, you're nice. Shortwave
it's
receiver?
It's a good radio, yeah.
Yep.
Some of them were made by Sangene. I'm not sure which model specifically, but...
Yeah, this is a...
Other ones were made by Eaton, which is like the
Grundig. Yeah,
who made the Grundig satellite series?
Yeah, mine was a Sangene. I've also got, I don't remember what the name of that thing is now. The box is over there, but I can't see it. I bought a little tiny shortwave receiver a year or so back.
Oh yeah,
that was
a little Texon thing.
Texon, yeah, that's what it was. Yeah. I don't remember the model number. It's okay. It's not. Yep. It's not as good as that.
I had a DX392, the one with the cassette recorder in it.
Yeah,
I wish I'd have kept that thing. I sold that thing at the Hamfest. I think Larry WZZQ bought it.
Wow,
remember him?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm pretty sure he's the one that got it.
I've got an email here. Not to be outdone by Mike, I actually have an email too.
No way.
Not him. M-A-I-L. This came from our friend Chip, who is in the chat room right there.
K9MIT Chip?
That Chip. He said, "Hi, guys. I don't know if it'd be of interest to viewers or not." Well, at this point, it doesn't matter because viewers are going to see it anyway right now. I think it would be. Not many hams are lucky enough to not only have a shack area in their house or apartment, but a building area as well. A workbench of some sort that can be marred a bit, as well as the occasional solder burn, without any serious repercussions. Email, can I get an amen?
Amen. Brother George.
Yeah.
That's there, right. Your wife will thank you.
Then there are others that will use a readily available kitchen table as a building surface.
I've seen that but happen.
Heaven help us if you drop a hot soldering iron on it or worse. He paid $17 for it on Amazon. It's a silicon mat that can take hot solder and other mishaps without damage to the surface that it's sitting on. It also has handy compartments for storing small components as you're working, and it's big enough for most electronic builds. It could be used in an RV or any area requiring a build area. He says he'll let the diagram on the box describe all the features. It's got several parts boxes on it, a magnetic area, tool supply.
That's kind of neat. It's got an area on the right there with all those looks like little holes in a dot pattern. They're hold screws.
Oh, yep.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
I have that exact mat.
The various components and cutouts are great for holding tools, as pictured, to keep small parts from rolling all over and disappearing in a sudden sneeze by the builder. Oh, yeah. A very important lesson there for surface mount. He used his diode tester that he built 40 years or so ago for scale. And he said he can prove it's dated because of the Dymo labels on it there.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Chip always finds the neat stuff.
Yeah. I've actually got a workbench, but it's kind of covered up with stuff right now. But my problem is it's not huge. And screws roll off of it, and then I have to get down and crawl around on the floor or something like that to keep the screws from rolling off, even if you have a regular work surface.
Yeah.
So I might have to get one of those.
Another tip, you can use the lid of a shoebox or a box or something like that if you've got real tiny parts and sit that down, put all your parts in there, and if you drop them, they don't roll off. But I like what Chip had there.
Yeah, it's cool.
Or a baking pan. Some people have used baking pans or muffin tins.
Yeah.
I think that's what Joe Eisenberg uses.
I believe you're right.
I think so.
Yeah. Okay. Tommy, have you got your tire-kicking shoes on?
I do. I got my tire buddy, and I'm ready to roll.
Imagine hanging on to this 905 when we did the video with Ray, the unboxing and walkthrough. So I've got it. The three antennas that he showed, and they actually sent me a 10 gigahertz dish, a parabolic antenna to use. I did take it out of the box, but I haven't actually hooked it up yet because the weather's kind of bad. I'm not going to be able to get to that today, but look for another video to follow this one, and we're going to take it out. Anyway, let's take a look at this radio. Well, here's the setup I've got for today. I've got the cable running from the rig inside to from the power supply in the head, run out the window, and I've got it hooked up to the RF deck. I'm hooked up right now to the 5-point-something gig antenna, little short piece of cable. It goes up to the antenna I've got mounted at the top. Using my little tripod at the moment since this is a temporary setup. This is what I believe is the GPS antenna that we talked about with Ray on the other video on his channel. It was in the bag, so I hooked it up there. So I'll see if we got GPS in just a few moments. Before I go any farther, today's actually winter field day, and it looks like winter outside. It's rainy, misty rain. It's kind of cold, not terribly cold, but mostly it's kind of misty rain off and on, so I've got the stuff all covered up out there. But let's take a look. I'm running off of a battery today. I've got my little Miati 8-amp-hour LifePoke battery you've seen before. I've run my 705 off of it several times on the show. But anyway, we've got it hooked up. The only thing I've got hooked up to it right now is the microphone, the battery, and the RF deck is hooked up on this cable coming out the side right here.
There's some cool things on this radio we're going to look at. I don't know how much communicating we're going to do. I don't think there's a lot of activity in my area. I'd like to see some more people in the area get some, so I'd have somebody to chat with on it. But we'll see what we can find. If you want more information on the radio, you can go see the link here at Icom America's YouTube page that we did with Ray a while back. But let's go ahead and look. It works just like the rest of the Icom radios. If you touch the frequency, it brings up the bands. We've got 2 meters, 70 centimeters, 1.2 gigahertz, 2.4, 5.6, and 10 gigahertz. The 10 gigahertz works with the optional transverter. And I don't have that hooked up at the moment because of the weather. Let's see. So it's got different modes, FM, sideband, CW, RIDI, AM, amateur TV, FM again, DV for D-Star, digital data, and then data. We'll play with the ATV stuff in a minute, but it's really cool. First of all, I want to scan around and see what we can find. Okay, so that's 5.6 gigahertz is the 5 centimeter band. According to this band planned off the Icom America chart, it's a 5650 to 5925. With different parts of it sliced up for different things, as usual. Satellite downlink, Earth, Moon, Earth, beacons, so forth. So 5760.3, 5760.4. So let's see what we can find there. Frequency input, 5760.3. Enter. And I'm just not seeing much. Check the squelch. Oh, we're on FM. Okay, so we got it squelched down, volume's up so we can hear. And I'm not seeing much. I'm not really surprised because there's just not a lot around my area. I've got my little drone here. And it's got a video transmitter on it. So I'm going to hook up the battery to that. And let's play around with the ATV stuff and see what we can get. Okay, now it's going. So let's find it. I don't remember exactly what frequency it's on, so we'll just have to look for it. And we'll go ahead and increase that to the max. There it is. Guarantee that's it right there. Okay, let's go to FM. Let's do ATV. Oh, so here in the north, the sound coming out of the speaker mic here. This one. Let's just turn that down for the time being. No, let's try it. Menu, to video. There we go. And you can see if I move the camera around, you can see something. But it doesn't pick it up clear. I think it's because the drone is probably sending a wider bandwidth, and we're not getting the entire data we need to form the picture on the radio. But anyway, it's kind of cool. It was a neat experiment. Thought I'd see if it works. I'm going to unplug there. The drone went off, and you can see that. Oh, well, actually, let me show you one more thing. Turn it back on. There we go. If you hold this down, goes full screen, which is pretty cool. Anyway, it was a cool experiment. Thought it was neat to play around with, but didn't work for that. Quick meter. Oops. Oh, satellite. There's our satellite. So that was the satellite antenna out there. I swapped the antenna out there with the 2.4 gig antenna. And I moved the coax to the output of the RF deck that's for the 2.4. So you can have multiple antennas set up there at one time, but I just don't have the room for it right now. So let's go ahead and change over here to 2400. And let's go down to the bottom. That must be it right there. No telling. It's probably my wireless microphone. Wow, look at all that. Or my Wi-Fi. But there's one cool thing left that I wanted to show you. If you run a camera into this thing, you can actually send video. You saw me trying to receive video from my drone a few minutes ago. So I've got George's old analog camcorder here we used to use when we started up Amateur Logic. And I've got a series of adapters set up to bring the ground, the video, and the audio to this tip. And the radio has a jack for that. Which one is it? AVN is right there where my finger is, so let's plug this up. FM, ATV again. And we'll turn that down so we don't need to hear that. And we'll do menu page 2, video. Now we see receive, there's nothing on that frequency. I don't even know what frequency that is. It doesn't really matter. But I'm going to turn the camera on, and with a little bit of luck, we should get a video. Oh, helps if I plug it all the way into the camera. But you can see there's a video. That's my live video feed right there. And so you could send that over there really easily. That's very cool. We don't have any ATV stuff in my area again. It's pretty basic here. We've got a few 2-meter repeaters, a few 70-centimeter repeaters, D-Star, a couple Fusion maybe, and there may be a DMR one. There was. I'm not even sure if it's still around. But anyway, it's pretty cool stuff. So you can see it's spinning around. There's my lights, my camera. It's kind of dark. I don't have a lot of light in here. This camera is not the best for that. Anyway, it's pretty neat stuff. I wish I had somebody that had one close by that I could send video back and forth to and try that. I've always wanted to do video over the air. But you can see it's entirely possible. Well, it's a fun radio. It's really cool. The video stuff to me is absolutely amazing. I would love to play with that, like I mentioned a while ago. The 10 gigahertz stuff, I'm looking forward to that too. I've got the dish, but again, the weather just isn't very conducive for that. It's a little bit windy out there, and I've got that tripod. I don't think it's going to stay up without guying it down, and it's kind of rainy, misty rain, and kind of nasty, so look for that. Hopefully, I can get one more video in before I have to send this back to Ray. If you've got any questions about it or know anybody in the area that's got 2.4, 5 gigs or 10 gigs, let me know. I'd like to hook up with you and have a QSO, make a few contacts on it. 73.
It's a pretty cool radio, man.
That is pretty cool.
It's just so new that there's just not a lot of people around here with those frequencies right now. But if we don't get somebody on them and start using them, we're going to end up losing that stuff.
Yeah.
It'd be a shame.
You know, we did a path profile between you and me just to see if we had line of sight, but there's a real big hill just not far from
basically
my house.
Basically in your backyard, it seems like.
Yeah, it looks like it.
I don't have an email, but I saw a post on the Facebook that caught my eye.
Okay.
From our friend Terry. He's actually in the chat room. Terry is...
Terry from the UK?
Yeah, 2E0IPK, Terry. And he says, this Amateur Logic TV keeps making me put my hands in my pockets to pay out for good equipment. Like Tommy's ham clock on Mike's Raspberry Pi 5. First Pi he's ever owned. He's got to be honest, so you do produce some great items.
I don't know when they started doing it, but the latest iteration of our version, you can browse to whichever one is running ham clock and get an actual live video of the ham clock app on any web browser.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's pretty
cool. Check it out. Go look at the ports that are available on ham clock now. Cool. So you run it one place and you access it from any computer.
Tuesday, March 26th.
I think, Tommy, you and I are doing that night.
We are. I'll be in Dallas. If I have something I can't make it, Tom's going to stand in for me, but I should be fine.
Get into the net on any of these nodes listed here or various methods. So, Tommy, you know, you have these dreams ever so often.
Oh boy. I don't even know what started this.
You know, you're at a ham fest, but you don't have a shirt on.
A shirt on.
Yeah.
Well, at least you're not naked in that dream.
Yeah.
Only half.
So if you were thinking ahead, how could you be prepared for such a situation?
Well, I would say you should go to the Amateur Logic Swag Store at shop.spreadshirt.com/amateurlogic and go ahead and get yourself a shirt. You might want to get a spare one to put in your pants pocket, I guess, in case you don't have
just in case.
Shirt yep. one on.
Facebook.com/group/amateurlogic.tv.
Yeah, you can also follow us on Twitter at amateurlogic.
Or on X.
That either too. Way.
Groups.io/amateurlogic?
G/amateurlogic.
Okay, right. Yeah.
And if you need show notes, and let's face it, who doesn't? There's a place you can get those as well.
You can. You can get them at amateurlogic.tv/wiki.
Mm-hmm. Wiki, wiki, wiki. There's, you know, like tonight, it would have been a good time for me to have notes before we got started. There's a couple little buttons right down there near the bottom that say like and share. If you would click those, we'd appreciate it.
Absolutely. Especially on the release.
And don't forget to ring that bell.
Yes. Is there a bell?
Yeah, it's a reminder. It's a little bell for reminding.
Okay.
You said we have a problem.
Well, before we get out of here, Tommy, any final thoughts for the audience tonight?
That's a trick question. No, it's been a fun show, though. I've had a really good time. Of course, I always have a good time or wouldn't be here for going on 19 years.
Yeah.
It's a long time to sit in this chair.
That is, and the chair has not gotten any more comfortable.
It hasn't. But anyway, we'll see you guys, some of you, for the next Ham College coming up in a couple weeks.
Just a trivia point here. I think we sat in stools when we started.
Over there?
Yeah.
With Jimmy?
Yep.
Yeah, because we didn't have enough room to get three chairs together.
I remember that with George's big 19-inch racks and consoles and stuff.
Yep. I think we had some acoustic foam insulation behind us.
Some.
Which was covering up a bunch of junk that was back there.
We were basically like shoulder to shoulder, too.
Yep. And hitting the edges of the building. Yeah. It was a small shack in those days. Email, any thoughts?
Keep it cheap.
Any thoughts from the Great White North? Is it still white?
You know what? I just saw a flash come across my computer screen just before the show started saying that there's snow coming on Tuesday.
Wow. 7-3, everyone.
7-3. Catch you next time.
7-3. What?